You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. Today, our Dakota political junkie joins us with a reexamination of civility and history ahead of your Thanksgiving holiday. Seth Tupper is editor-in-chief of South Dakota Searchlight, and he's joining us from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Hey, Seth, welcome back.
Hey, Lori, thanks for having me.
We're going to start by talking about an event that you covered called the Level Up Youth Conference. It's out in Rapid City at Western Dakota Tech, and Congressman Johnson was talking about civility. Tell me a little bit about the event first.
Yeah, this was Dusty Johnson's, it was his event. His staff organized it, and I went and attended it just because I thought it was interesting. We were coming right off the big brouhaha in D.C. Over the speaker and all the machinations over that. And it was just a few days after the new speaker was elected. And, of course, there was quite a display in D.C. during that whole episode of people not being civil in some cases. And here was a congressman taking several hours out of his day to just sit with hundreds of high school students and talk at length about the importance of civility and public service. And so that's basically what it was. They gathered students from Rapid City and other schools in the Black Hills, and they got together in a big room at Western Dakota Technical College here in Rapid City. Congressman Johnson gave a talk. He had some talks by local media professionals. He had information on how to join service academies or how to apply to military service academies. He had even had a message from Captain America, Chris Evans, who Dusty Johnson has partnered with in a project to encourage civility in politics. There was a taped message from Chris Evans, and Congressman Johnson, not very subtly, said that he's become friends with Chris Evans, which I thought was pretty funny, trying to score some points with the kids there. So, so it was just kind of a really interesting sort of different way to go for a politician in today's climate.
Yeah. All right. So if you had brouhaha and machinations on your Dakota political junkie vocabulary bingo card, you're ahead of the game, and you get to eat your dessert first tomorrow at your Thanksgiving dinner if you're lucky enough to have one.
Just spicing up the sleepy pre-holiday day here for you. So anyway,
thank you. You felt that this was, and I'm asking this for a reason because I just saw Congressman Johnson yesterday at an event here in Sioux Falls for veterans, and one of the things that struck me was there was a genuineness to the time and the priorities that he had in spending. He's obfuscating, that he means
another
this.
Word.
Yes, thank you. he meant this. This is the room he wants to be in. He wanted to be in a room with veterans honoring their service and talking about what it means to stand up and sacrifice for peace. He wanted to be with these students talking about civil conversation. Is that the impression that you got?
Yeah. I mean, as a journalist, I'm always loath to give politicians too much credit for anything. But, and there's always a political calculation of some kind in whatever politicians do. Let's be realistic about that.
But I'm so much nicer than you are. I'm so much nicer than you. Like, I didn't see any calculation. The calculation I saw was like, this is a way better way to spend my day than some of the other things that I'm forced to do. That was my calculation.
Yeah, but what you hope, I think, is that you have political leaders who are able to, yes, they have political ambition like all politicians, but they're also willing to set that aside at certain times and, do things like you just talked about, do things like spend a few hours with high school kids talking about the importance of civility and bring some actual public service to the job. And so I thought, there is some credit that is due to Congressman Johnson for doing an event like that when he could have been doing anything else. He could have been out giving a seminar about how the last election was stolen, or something like that.
Right. And like his staff, to your point earlier, his staff was there and they were ready to help kids figure out service academy applications. His staff was at the Vietnam Veterans Pinning Ceremony yesterday, and they were there to help veterans after the ceremony figure out any kind of needs. How much, in your experience, how much of a congressional staff's time is really spent, you know, just helping everyday South Dakotans navigate a federal system, for example.
I think people would be surprised for the members of Congress who are service-oriented and who make that a priority. I think people would be surprised to know how much time that does take up and how much that is a lot of what they do, because what we see is just, you know, hey, Congressman Johnson came out of a Republican caucus meeting and commented on the speaker situation. And right, of course, that's what makes the news and that's what we report on. But yeah, in the background, I think people would be very surprised to know that the wheels are always constantly turning on constituent requests and helping people navigate the federal government and service academy applications and things like that. I think is the less glamorous part of the job, but probably a bigger part of it than people realize.
Yeah. So he talks in your reporting about the politics of fear and anger and what he thinks, you know, can be done, especially by young people these days. And I'm wondering if you see that as a safe place to be, or is that a place where he risks getting accused of not standing up and doing the right thing when the right thing needs to be done? So is it safe to be in the, hey, we need to have civil conversation and think bipartisanly, or is it the risky place to be right now? What I'm asking there? Whatever time to
Absolutely. And that's where the political calculation comes in. I think, you know, it's a risky place to be in his party and from the perspective of potentially getting a primary challenger. It's maybe a safe place to be in the general election because, you know, Congressman Johnson's in an interesting spot where people on the right of the political spectrum are kind of angry at him for not being more in lockstep with Donald Trump and that wing of the party. And then, you know, people on the left end of the left side of the political spectrum are angry at him for not standing up to Donald Trump and being more opposed to him, you know. And so he's kind of occupying this precarious spot in the middle, which goes great in a general election. I think, you know, it makes him very safe in a general election environment. But he is always vulnerable to anybody who would want to run to his right as and present themselves as a more supposedly, you know, conservative option. It does make it kind of risky for him in any primary. So he's in a unique position. And, you know, I think that's maybe why it makes it a little bit laudable that he is willing to, despite the risks involved, you know, stand up for civility and say the election wasn't stolen and say all those kinds of things that could hurt him in a primary.
Yeah, the media is not the enemy of the people.
Right. Yeah, he said that. And he that was one of the things he talked to the students about in Rapid City, was making sure that, you know, they have a healthy media diet and they're looking at news from reputable sources and getting news from multiple sources and not just getting it from one place that they agree with. And again, that runs counter to a lot of the things that, you know, some of the people in his own party are saying constantly in Washington, D.C.,
Yeah, I'm reading this from your South Dakota Searchlight report, and it says, in the pre-recorded message, Evan says the, quote, ability to engage in civil, thoughtful, and inclusive discussion is the foundation of a healthy democracy. Dusty understands this better than most. I love that. Well, better than most.
Yeah, coming
from
compliment. Captain America.
Captain America's seal of approval. All right. How did the students respond?
Well, that was interesting, you know, and... I don't know if my daughter will appreciate me saying this, but she was one of the students there. So I was very interested. She's a student at a high school here in Rapid City, and she's in an AP government class right now. And they went, and I asked her afterwards what she thought of it. It was pretty boring. That was one. But, you know, what I think... The real impact, and I think that's a normal thing for any teenager to say when they're bused to a place to listen to some, you know, politicians talk or whatever. But I hope and I think what the impact will be for a lot of these kids and students who are at this event is that as they carry on and they become old enough to vote and they get involved in politics in the future, they'll remember this, and then they'll see that, you know, there are politicians who yell and scream at each other and politicians that get up and scream at the president during the State of the Union. And then there are others that do things like spend a few hours with high school students telling them that it's really important to be civil and to be respectful of other people's viewpoints and that kinds of things. I think they'll at some point they'll look back and appreciate that they received that message and somebody was out there providing it.
Yeah, that capital there. All right, one more before we let you go, and that is a new book that was released that you thought was important to interview the author, and it has some personal resonance to you, too, as a fifth-generation descendant of Dakota Territory yeah. homesteaders, which I did not, I guess, fully realize about you. Tell us about this book and this author.
Yeah, so I saw this, an excerpt from this book that Politico ran about a month ago, and the book is called The Cost of Free Land, and it's written by a woman named Rebecca Clarin, whose Jewish ancestors from Russia came to the United States and got land under the Homestead Act in actually Eastern Pennington County here in western South Dakota. And basically, you know, established a new life for themselves and their family and their descendants here on the plains of South Dakota. And she is a journalist herself, and she's always been curious about the family story. So the book is her effort to research her family history, and but also at the same time to research what was going on with Native people in this area, the people who were displaced from the land that her relatives were then given for free through the Homestead Act. And the book is her attempt to make sense of this and to decide how she feels about it and what if anything she and her family should do about that. And so, you know, it's a really fascinating book, but you know, I'm certainly not unique in saying that I'm descended from homesteaders here in South Dakota. So I think it's something that many thousands of South Dakotans can relate to and sort of find a lot of lessons and parallels for their own life in this book. I highly recommend it.
And so starting with learning the history and being comfortable with holding two things in your mind at the same time, the story of pride and resilience and endurance can be true while this other thing is also true. But then you go on near the end of your column to say there's things to be done about it beyond just understanding the history and learning more. Because sometimes I think we get stuck in that, you must know your history, and then you're like, really, we don't know it yet? And the truth is, nope, lots of people don't. But once you do know the history, there's more work to be done.
Yeah, and that's what I like about this book. The author, Rebecca Clarin, is Jewish, and she focuses a lot on trying to discern through her Jewish faith and tradition how that informs what she should maybe do about this. And she and her family decided to start a fund with the, I believe it's called the Indian Land Tenure Foundation, which is an organization that helps tribes buy back lands that they lost to broken treaties or pieces of that land, obviously, here and there. And, you know, that was something that through her journey and through her research and her own family story and her own discussions with her family that they decided to do. But what I love about her book is that she kind of lays out, and she even has a section in the book with advice on if you want to research your own family story, here's resources that are helpful, here's how you can do it, here's how you can find the original homestead paperwork and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And what she's really encouraging people to do is, you know, what if you do your own research on your own family history, you might decide that you feel called to do something else about it. You know, there might be something else that you want to do. And so the book is really great for that, that it's calling individual people to research their own family story and come to their own conclusions about it and see what they feel moved to do about it in the end.
All right. The book that we've been talking about, The Cost of Free Land, the author is Rebecca Clarin. That's Clarren. And you can go to SouthDakotaSearchlight.com to find all of Seth's work. We'll put links up on our website as well. Seth Tupper, thanks so much. We'll see you next time. Happy Thanksgiving.
You bet. Happy Thanksgiving to you.